Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several must-read bestsellers. Welcome back, Peter.
Well, thanks for welcoming me back. Yeah, you know, certainly the first bubble to bust were the cryptos, right? They made new record highs, I think, December of last year. I'm not sure if they made a new high in January, but the bust started pretty early in the year. And in fact, some of these cryptocurrencies are down 70-80% or more from their highs. So, you know, and these are currencies that, of course, were way, way up. And in fact, they're still up. I mean, all these currencies that are down 70-80%, you know, they're still up from where they were a year ago. So there's still a lot of air left to come out of the crypto bubble. But I do believe that we've popped. I think we've most likely seen the highs. And it doesn't mean there's not going to be rallies. There'll be plenty of rallies, but I think the trend is down. And I think ultimately we're going to see complete collapse. And, you know, maybe it'll happen before the end of the year. So that bubble is bursting. The bond bubble, that started to burst, I think, in February. And the stock market bubble probably too. We had a huge decline. We had about a 10% drop in the stock market in about a week. Of course, it recovered a good chunk of that. The NASDAQ went on to make a new high. But I certainly, around the time of the top, and I was saying this on my podcast, that all the classic signs of a mania were there. I mean, because I couldn't turn on the television without hearing people talk about Bitcoin. You know, everybody was talking about it. It was the hottest topic. It was all over. I mean, conversations. I mean, people, I was running into people who were talking about it. So it was like, hey, this has got to be it. How more obvious does it get? You know, I just wish that I had taken this bubble more seriously years ago. I could have made a fortune if I'd have bought into the, you know, Bitcoin when it was, you know, a few dollars a coin to hold on for that ride. I mean, obviously, yeah, of course, all the money that I would have made would have been at the expense of other suckers who would have bought my overpriced Bitcoin. So it would have been a gigantic transfer of wealth. I mean, at least I would have been on the receiving end of it.
You have brought up here in the past how your family emigrated from Europe. What would we have all done if we'd been caught behind enemy lines in 1939, maybe Warsaw, something along those lines? And you've made some really interesting parallels to the usefulness of gold. But now, fast forward to today, we all agree gold, it's the ballast in your portfolio. Wouldn't it be great to have a means to leave the continental United States if suddenly, I don't know, a dictator came into power here with just, you know, your private keys memorized on your Bitcoin?
Yes, the only question is, what will those Bitcoins be worth when you get there? You know, so it's great in theory. Yes, I can move my wealth out of the country very easily, assuming that the wealth is still there when you want to leave the country. That is the big gamble, because you're putting your faith into basically nothing, right? It's a complete, it's all based on confidence and the ultimate fiat currency, right? It's all a function of, does everybody believe it has value? I mean, I would personally rather have my gold stored offshore, knowing that I can get access to that gold from anywhere in the world. So I don't, you know, if I buy gold and I have it stored in Switzerland or Singapore or, you know, Dubai or Australia, that gold is there, you know, and I don't have to physically go to Australia to get my gold from Australia. I can go wherever I want and I can have it shipped to me. Or, you know, I don't even have to have it shipped to me. I can sell it and I can use the proceeds, or I can even use the gold as a medium of exchange, you know. So it's there. And of course, you know, you could buy gold jewelry and wear it. You know, I just, you know, I picked up about $20,000 worth of jewelry for my wife from Menee, you know, MENE.com. And, you know, the beauty of buying that is jewelry. I mean, they're very nice necklaces, you know, some, you know, different earrings and bracelets. But, I mean, I'm not just buying jewelry. I'm buying gold. I'm buying 24 karat gold, which, you know, you can wear it on a plane and you don't have to declare it. I mean, if you're wearing $20,000 worth of gold jewelry, you know, obviously I can sell that for $20,000 as 24 karat gold, but I don't have to. I just bought some cufflinks. I bought two cufflinks for myself. They're $5,000 for the cufflinks, but it's almost all gold. I mean, I can melt it down. It's 24 karat gold cufflinks, but you don't have to declare that. You got on a plane. You don't have to declare that as currency, but it is. Gold to me, I have a lot more faith in something real, something tangible, something that's been around for thousands of years and has been valued, you know, by so many different societies and cultures. It's not like it's just something that Americans want. This is worldwide. I mean, gold is valued in India. It's valued in China. I mean, you know, and this is where the middle classes are growing. Demand is growing. I mean, cryptocurrencies, yeah, you got a bunch of millennials who like them because they think they can get rich quick. It's interesting, too, about today. I mean, because, you know, the Fed, I forget when you air the interview. Yeah, because at 2 o'clock, we get the Fed's decision on rates. Everybody expects them to hike by another quarter point. Yet gold's up about $15 this morning. I mean, I rarely see gold up on the morning of a rate hike. I mean, so people sold the rumor of the rate hike, and now they're buying before the fact. Can't even wait till the fact. I mean, let's see if this indicates something. Oil, too. Oil up over $1.50. Crude oil back over $65 a barrel. So we're seeing strength in oil. We're seeing strength in gold on a day the Fed's going to hike rates. And, of course, the dollar is down. Dollar index, you know, back down right about at 90. But looking very, very weak to me. You know, the bond market, I mean, we had a big move down. We've been consolidating, but the yield now on the 10-year is right back at 2.9. You know, once we take out 3%, I think we can have a quick move to 3.25, 3.5. You know, the markets, I don't think, can handle that. And, of course, that's not going to be the top. I mean, rates have to go much, much higher. Look at the budget deficits that we're about to have. You know, the national debt last week skyrocketed above $21 trillion. It's going to break $22 trillion this calendar year. I mean, you know, we're going to go from $20 trillion to $22 trillion in the same, you know, 2018. The trade deficits are exploding. I mean, you know, this is, you know, you can't finance these kind of debts. You know, interest rates have just got to go way up.
Interest rates, a topic I'd like to get to a bit later here in the discussion, because obviously that's ubiquitous. It's going to impact every area. We've got record student loans. We've got record defaults across the board. Auto loans, student loans at risk. This is multi-trillion dollar, could topple the economy. Before we do, I'd like to just kind of circle back to the cryptos, because you certainly can recognize a lot of these core developers here. No schmageggies, okay, if you will. I mean, there's a pretty sharp folks. They obviously see institutional money lining up. Because, you know, up until recently, we just haven't had the ability for the deep money, the deep pockets, the hedge funds, the institutions. They have not had that custodial opportunity, potential of several hundred billion dollars piling into this market over the next decade.
I think the hedge funds and some of the more mainstream money was attracted to the potential, the story, the sex, the sizzle, the big gains. But that could be over as far as I know. I mean, you know, that money could have already been put to work. I mean, I don't know that any more money is coming, especially with the magnitude of the decline that we've already seen. You know, so I don't know that more money is going to be rushing into the space. I think, you know, individuals, if they want to get involved in cryptocurrency, they don't need a fund manager to take 2 and 20. I mean, anybody could just go online and buy cryptocurrencies. I mean, so I don't even see the value add by having a fund manager do it for you. You know, and in fact, I think you lose a lot of the so-called benefits of owning the cryptocurrencies if you own them through a hedge fund or through an ETF or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, there's a good chance that trade is over with, that it was the hype of that.
Yeah, it's baked into the cake. So what you're saying is other markets and other times in history where these large institutions, by law, they have a fiduciary responsibility, custodial, someone who carries the financial assets on their books for them. Case in point, look at Goldman Sachs, all right? Not only have they just created their own Bitcoin trading desk, but now they're talking about providing custodial services for hundreds of billions of dollars.
Gold money, you know, which I've been talking about, you know, where you can buy gold and silver, they now let you trade Bitcoin, Ethereum, and they provide, you know, cold storage and stuff like that. And they're making a lot of money, actually. People are buying and selling. I mean, there's a lot of commissions. But, you know, I think a lot of the fund managers, I mean, are reluctant to, because I do believe that when these cryptocurrencies collapse and investors lose money, a lot of the investors are going to sue the financial advisors that got them in and say, oh, you should have realized this was a scam and a Ponzi scheme. And, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, so I think there's a lot of risk for professionals, you know, convincing people to get into this.
You don't see it as, let's say, 1995, 96 internet boom. You feel that we're 99, 2000.
The internet boom, you had actual companies that, even though they were losing money, people just believed that eventually they would make money, right? That was the whole idea. It was like a land grab for eyeballs and crypto space, and the whole world was going to change, and these online companies were going to reap these huge profits as a result of this big transition. And, you know, in a way, people were right. they're you know, but all the profits were reaped by Amazon. Although they actually didn't even reap any profits, they just reaped all the revenues. A cryptocurrency and like a pets.com. At least with pets.com, you were betting on the profits that pets.com could generate by selling, you know, dog food on the internet, even if you believed they were going to have a profit. There was at least some type of viable long-term goal. If you're buying a cryptocurrency, that cryptocurrency itself can never generate a profit. It can never do anything. It is not a business. It is not an asset that is going to produce income and pay dividends. You're just buying something because you think the price is going to go up. You know, so it's sheer speculation. It's not speculating on a business making a profit. It's just speculating that other people will want to buy what you just bought at an even higher price.
It might be a bit myopic, at least in one area. Let's juxtapose the greenback, fiat money, this versus what we're talking about, the potential here. I mean, it really is the difference between our local bookstore, which we all like, and Amazon.com. You have a Swiss Army knife in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and some of these other...
It's not even an improvement on the dollar or the euro or the yen. You know, just because the euro or the dollar is not backed by something doesn't mean that, well, we can just create a digital version that's backed by nothing either. You know, if we want to go back to real money, then we go back to gold. I mean, that is what we have. We have the ability to remonetize gold and use the internet, or even use blockchain to distribute gold. But you have to have money underlying a monetary system. You just can't decide that this cryptocurrency is going to be money.
There's a lot more going on here than just someone declaring it has value. I mean, we both agreed in the past here on the show that it requires a tremendous amount of energy to obviously mine and refine gold, silver.
It takes a lot of energy to mine it, but once you've mined it, you have nothing to show for all the effort that you spent. You have a Bitcoin that has no intrinsic properties that delivers any use to anybody.
Most gold does have some other purposes, but 99% of it sits in storage vaults.
That's fine, because there is a demand for it outside that storage vault. People want to store it is because of all the other properties that make storing it worthwhile. You know, there's nothing to store in Bitcoin. And again, there's 1,500 digital currencies. I mean, there could be 15,000. There is an infinite number of coins that could be created. There's an infinite number of forks that can be created out of Bitcoin. They got Bitcoin Cash. They got Bitcoin Gold. They got, you know, whatever you want is out there. I'm here in Puerto Rico, right? All these, you know, there's hundreds of crypto guys now are in Puerto Rico, right? They're calling it, you know, Cryptopia. I don't know what. First of all, the irony of it is they're all here because of me. The first guys that came here, the first crypto guys that came here told me that they came here because they heard me on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I talked about being in Puerto Rico and all the tax benefits, and those were the guys that started everything. They're the ones that brought this guy Brock Pierce here, you know, and then Brock, you know, brought all his disciples. But so they're all here because of me. They just had a big conference, a cryptocurrency conference. And they didn't even invite me. You know, I would have gone. I get invited. I turn down invitations because I don't feel like going to Hong Kong and Dubai. But I would have gone to the Vanderbilt. It's a half-hour drive from my house. They didn't want a negative opinion there at this. Max Kaiser was here in Puerto Rico. Didn't even call me. In New York, he came and visited me in Connecticut.
You know, back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and you drive up to the movie theater and you watch, I don't know, Indiana Jones. Cryptos are just the VCR, the DVR. You don't see it as an evolution?
They're not going to be money. They're not going to be currency. I mean, they're not going to work. You know, they lack the fundamental properties that you need to be a viable monetary unit. I mean, it's just not going to work, period. And I think even if I was wrong, if it could work, the government would prevent it. The government would outlaw it if it could actually work.
We've just had the CFTC, we've had the IRS, we've had the SEC. They've all labeled Bitcoin and cryptos. One is calling it an asset class, one calling it a de facto commodity, the other calling it a pseudo-currency, and then I think another one said that it's a security. So here's the thing. They can't even get on board to define what it is. So you can't regulate, obviously.
You know I have a bank, right? I have a Europe Pacific Bank, and I've had plenty of crypto businesses that wanted to open up accounts with us, and I'd love to do business with them, but I can't. I'm not allowed because of the AML concerns. No, none of the big banks will work with. Yeah, so it can't function. It cannot function as money if it's unbankable. Once the markets implode, once all the stores got rich because they put $1,000 into Bitcoin. They took their bar mitzvah money, and now they're millionaires. And, you know, I mean, you know, those stories are what was driving the narrative. But, you know, soon it's going to be about all the money that was lost. And, you know, it's going to be one of the, because here's what I know happened, right? So let's say somebody bought some Bitcoin in 2011, 2012. Let's say a guy threw a few thousand dollars into it and then cashed out a year ago. 2 years ago with like $100,000 profit, but didn't really cash out, took the money and bought, you know, other cryptocurrencies, built a diversified crypto portfolio, right? But never paid any taxes on the profits that he realized when he sold his Bitcoin. And maybe he thought, well, I don't even owe him because I'm not really selling. I'm just taking my Bitcoin and I'm buying something else. Then all these cryptocurrencies crash, right? And they end up losing back all their initial profits. Meanwhile, you have no money.
Yeah, the same thing happened with the internet bubble. You might recall that you had all these paper millionaires.
The way that happened was people that exercised employee stock options. So let's say you exercise an employee stock option and the stock was, you know, let's say $100 a share, and you exercised it, but you didn't sell the stock. You wanted to hold the stock for a year because you wanted long-term capital gains. Well, let's say the stock collapsed and you never sold it, but you still owed the income tax based on what it was worth when you exercised. Yeah, so there were a lot of people that ended up with tax bills that were higher than the value of their shares.
So let's move on now to the investment du jour, certainly for 2018. Might be the Bitcoin of 2018. That's the precious metals. You want to make a case for better prices in 2018?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, when you talk about bubbles bursting, it's almost like there's a bubble in not wanting gold. You know, it's a reverse bubble. It's a lack of interest. I mean, even you look at all the retailers. I mean, my company, Shift Gold, right? I think our business is off maybe 80% from where it was, you know, over the past several years. I mean, and I think a lot of this has to do with the election of Donald Trump and the outlook and everybody thinking that he's going to make America great again. You know, almost all the gold buyers are Republicans. Let's face it, you know, they're the ones that are worried about big government inflation. And so since they're so optimistic now about Trump, they haven't been buying gold. And I do think that the crypto bubble has also stolen some of gold's thunder. Money that might have otherwise gone into gold went into cryptos. And I think, you know, people who didn't buy either might have been said, well, you know, why should I buy gold? Because people will just buy cryptos instead. So even though people weren't necessarily buying it themselves, they looked at cryptos as competition for gold. And so a reason not to buy gold, even if they weren't buying cryptos, they were just kind of assuming that other people would do it. But I think that as the crypto bubble pops, you know, that's, you know, something that can really be a catalyst for, you know, gold to really take off, silver to take off. But I think what's really going to propel the metals is going to be when the Federal Reserve has to acknowledge the underlying weakness in the economy that they've been, you know, pretending didn't exist. You know, the Fed has been talking about raising rates and shrinking its balance sheet and all this great stuff. When the Fed has to eventually acknowledge that it's not going to do any of that, that in fact we're going back to zero, that we're going to do QE4, I mean, I think gold's going ballistic. I mean, if it hasn't already taken off before the Fed admits that, you know, if the market hasn't figured it out on its own, when the Fed has to admit it, then it's going to take off. And of course, we're going to have huge deficits. I think that if we go into recession, when we will go into recession, obviously, I mean, it's inevitable, but the next recession, we're going to have budget deficits of $2 to $3 trillion a year. So, I mean, you're talking off the charts debt. So, you know, they were doing $85 billion a month in QE under Obama. They're going to have to do like $200, $250 billion a month in QE during the next recession. You think about all that money printing, all that inflation. I mean, this is the perfect environment for gold and silver. So, I mean, it certainly could start this year. I mean, gold's $1,325 right now. You know, it was down to $1,050 when the Fed started hiking rates. And gold has gone up almost 30% as the Fed's been hiking. Imagine how much it's better it's going to do when the Fed stops hiking. And then imagine when they start cutting again.
What do you see as the trigger point? Is there a level where the general public starts to get interested again? Are we going to have to cross 1,500 or do we have to eclipse the previous bull highs?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think once we get above 1,400, I think we can get above 2,000 very quickly. I mean, I would be shocked to see that whole move happen in a couple of months. maybe even sooner. So I think it will excite some interest, but I think as the economy turns down, as measured inflation picks up, I think the Democrats are going to take Congress in 2018. That could do a lot to change the thinking, but certainly by 2020, when you've got that's going to really invigorate the gold market. We're going to have big tax hikes, big increases in government spending. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll have to forgive all the student loans and stuff like that, and it's just going to be massive inflation. So somewhere along that timeline, you're going to have the public moving into gold in a big way. Of course, they're going to be paying much, much higher prices for it.
Yeah, so what do you think about this theme we're seeing, permanent income?
Basic income. And look, socialism is having kind of a renaissance, right? Socialism is coming back. People just don't understand how dangerous and destructive socialism is. A lot of that has to do with our educational system and what a disaster public government schools are. The government has destroyed capitalism, it's given it such a bad name because what we have is not capitalism. The problems are the result of government that has involved itself in the economy. Yet it's always the free market that gets the blame, and the government is seen as the solution. But it is amazing, that so many people do not trust individuals, and they certainly don't trust individuals who decide to go into business, who incorporate, or businesses and corporations, which are simply businesses that have organized in a corporate form, but they simply represent a collection of individuals who have come together to form a business. But, the only way a business can make money is by convincing people to voluntarily purchase their goods or services, which means they have to offer a better product, higher quality, lower cost. They must convince people. They must persuade people to give them their money. And the only way they can do that is if they improve their lives. So in capitalism, you have all these individuals who are desperately trying to improve the lives of other individuals so that they can, win their business. And yet so many people distrust private individuals who are running businesses. But those same people completely trust private individuals that decide to make a career out of politics. And to me, it's the politicians that you can't trust because they don't have to win my support. They don't have to convince me of anything. They can force me to do what they want. They can take my money against my will because they can put me in jail or, if I don't give them what they take, right? So that's who I fear. I fear political power. I don't fear a business that's trying to convince me to buy their stuff because I don't have to buy it. It just takes whatever it wants.
Classic dilemma. You're talking about the entrepreneur versus the kleptocrat who's never created value, whereas the entrepreneur realizes that if I don't create value, I'm out of business.
I don't see how crypto gets you out of the loop from government. But my point is that the governments, they're like thugs. They're gangsters. That's what they are. But unfortunately, one of the things that government does very well is they create a sense of fear. They create monsters, and they convince the voter government is needed to protect them from all these evil people that will hurt them, all these greedy capitalists that will exploit them and discriminate against them, and that they convince the public that we're your solution, the free market. And the beauty of the free market, though, is that, it's the individual. It's not about you don't need the government to do things for you.
I think we need to differentiate. I mean, totally with you. Big government is a big problem. Obviously, we need our local police, our firefighters, all that stuff. I mean, but, some of the basic necessities, sure. But, we don't want this overarching kleptocracy making all the rules for their cronies and to their benefit. You're starting to sound a lot like Jeff Berwick down at Anarchapulco. Have you ever been down to the Anarchapulco conference?
No, I know who Jeff is. But I'm not an anarchist, I don't think that government has no role in society. I believe it has a limited role, and that role is limited to defending individual liberty and private property. But I don't see a progressive role for government where government is redistributing wealth, picking winners and losers, trying to micromanage the economy and alter outcomes and get involved in the distribution of wealth. That is not what government is supposed to do. Government is just there to protect my stuff from theft, right, to protect my rights. You know, it's not there to make my life better in that. It's not supposed to give me things. It's not supposed to give me food, give me health care, give me housing, give me, you know, education. These are things I'm supposed to provide for by myself. I'm supposed to go out there and earn money to provide things for myself. You know, I'm not supposed to rely on the government to steal things for me from other people and then distribute what they stole to me in exchange for my vote.
Any other markets you're watching closely, are you concerned at all by the real estate echo bubble? I mean, we've already eclipsed the former zenith. Is that on your radar screen?
All the assets are in a bubble, right? That was the goal of Fed policy, was to inflate a bubble. Because remember, the Federal Reserve, they operate under the assumption that economies grow because of paper wealth, that if they can just goose the stock market and the real estate market, we'll all be wealthier on paper. And because we're wealthier on paper, we can borrow more money, we can spend more money, and somehow that's going to grow the economy. And this is complete asinine theory. It's like saying that wet sidewalks cause the rain. What you actually do is you cause irrational decision-making and misallocations of resources. But the Fed inflated these asset bubbles, so every asset is overpriced, because assets are always a function of interest rates. And if you keep interest rates artificially suppressed, you know, for a decade, then you're going to artificially inflate real asset prices, stocks, bonds, real estate, and all these asset bubbles are going to break. They're going to pop. The only way that you can stop them from popping is another round of massive quantitative easing. But I believe we're at a point now that will not work. You can't do it again without destroying the dollar. If they try to give us another dose of monetary heroin, we will have an overdose, and the dollar will be destroyed. They will kill the dollar, and the price of gold is going to go ballistic.
The parallel you're drawing here is the 1970s, almost. But it looks like we could be looking at sort of a stagflationary nightmare.
Yeah, and not a happy ending. It's not like, because the 70s ended with Ronald Reagan and Paul Volcker, and we did the right thing. So this is going to be the 70s much worse, and it's not going to end well. Bigger crisis. I think we're going to have a monetary crisis. And you know, gold went up during the 1970s from $35 an ounce to $850. That was a very big percentage gain. Silver was like a buck, and it went up to $50. We could have a similar increase, maybe more, this time around.
Silver recently 81-1 on the gold to silver ratio. I mean, this is almost unprecedented. Do you see a relative value here, and why?
Yeah, look, obviously silver is going to eventually catch, you know, it's not going to, you know, catch up to gold, but it's going to reduce that spread. It's going to come back to something more normal, whether it's 60-1, 50-1, 40-1. I mean, obviously the ratio is going to improve. But I do believe that from a monetary perspective, though, I think now, given the internet, maybe even the blockchain and things that companies like Gold Money are doing, I think it's a lot easier today to use gold as money than it was 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And one of the reasons that people use silver as money was because it was hard to use gold for very small transactions. But I think today it's very easy to use gold for small transactions. So you may not need silver as a monetary metal to the extent that we have in the past. It may mainly be an industrial metal. But even as an industrial metal, silver is still ridiculously cheap. But I think silver is going a lot higher, you know, and it's probably going to have a bigger gain than gold. But I don't think we're going all the way back to maybe 12-1 or 15-1. I don't know that it's going to be that big a move, but I do think that you're going to see silver closing that gap, you know, to a more realistic gold-silver ratio.
Gold Money, James Turk, big friends here of the show for over a decade. And, you know, their Gold Money crypto sort of pseudo idea, very solid. The only thing I would throw out here, keep in mind, this is not decentralized. There is that single point of failure, that risk, that exposure that exists when you're dealing with a single company.
You're dealing with Brinks. I mean, Brinks hasn't lost any gold in, I don't know, 150, 200-year history, however long it's been around. But the idea that you don't have to trust anybody when you're dealing with cryptocurrencies, I mean, there's a lot of third parties in there if you're using exchanges, so there's a lot of trust. And then the ultimate is that somebody's going to actually want your cryptocurrency in the future, because they may not. You know, I mean, and if nobody wants it, it has no value. There is absolutely no risk, in my mind, that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, there'll be no market for gold, right? The gold market is going to be around in 5 or 10 years. We have no idea if the Bitcoin market will exist in 5 or 10 years.
We would never advocate that anybody put in more than 1% of their disposable wealth into crypto. There are a lot of networking and protocol aspects that really parallel email, for instance. I mean, all the cases that are being made against the cryptos today, it's just a chorus from the 1990s. You know, oh, this internet, it's for bad guys and bad actors, and, you know, it's never going to go anywhere. Mostly that was entrenched interests doing everything they could to defend their turf. Obviously, I'm a believer. I haven't made a convert today. But I'm not going to give up. Peter Schiff, tell folks more about all the great stuff you're doing over there at Schiff Gold.
Yeah, well, if you want to buy some real gold, and, you know, Schiff Gold was probably, I don't know if we were the first, but maybe we were the second gold company to accept Bitcoin through BitPay to buy gold and silver. So if you have some Bitcoin and you want to buy some, you know, real gold as opposed to digital gold, you know, Schiff Gold will sell it to you. Gold Money, by the way, too, you could just go online and, you know, they'll accept Bitcoin and Ether in exchange for gold, silver, platinum, palladium. So, you know, open up an account, goldmoney.com, call us up at shiftgold.com. Whether you got paper money or fiat money, I mean, or cryptocurrencies, you know, buy yourself some silver, buy yourself some gold. If you have a bigger portfolio, you know, I only recommend 10 to 20% of a portfolio in gold. The rest should be invested in more traditional income-producing assets. I help clients invest money all around the world in stocks that I've handpicked with my team in countries like Singapore, New Zealand, Switzerland, Hong Kong. I mean, all around the world. I have managed accounts. I have proprietary mutual funds where I've, you know, picked the right companies. So give us a call. You know, go to our website, europac.com. You know, call us up or fill out something online. And, yeah, listen to my podcast. I'm going to do another one later today, my reaction to the FOMC rate decision and to the press conference. We're going to have the Jerome Powell, the first press conference he's had as Fed chief. So I'll be giving my reaction to that on my podcast. So you can get it at shiftradio.com. And also you can listen to it on my YouTube channel and, you know, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff. I have a, you know, I'm trying to do what I can on social media to get the word out. But the interesting thing is, if I did run for president in 2020, I couldn't vote for myself because I live in Puerto Rico. And when you live in Puerto Rico, you surrender your right to vote. But that was okay because I also gave up my obligation to pay income taxes. So it's a trade-off that I'm willing to make. And of course, you can run for president as a resident of Puerto Rico. You just can't vote.
And we certainly hope that you're, you know, looking out for some of the folks that went through that horrible storm down there. I mean, what a devastation in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I have made quite a few charitable donations since I've been here. Yeah, so some of the money I didn't send it to Washington in taxes, I've used locally for hurricane relief.
Thank you, Peter Schiff.
Okay.